The UK Psych Health and Safety and ISO 45003 podcast. The goal of the UK Psych Health and Safety podcast is to be your source of information on psychological injury prevention, health promotion, and best practice. In doing this, we aim to rapidly advance the global practice of psychological health and safety in workplaces and adoption of best practices from the ISO 45003 standard. We will be looking at fully integrated approaches to managing psych health and safety and well-being strategy in the workplace that meet the needs of everyone in the organisation. Your regular host will be Peter Kelly, Senior Psychologist with the UK Health and Safety Executive, and Sheila Lord of BMR Health and Wellbeing. Every week, we will have a guest episode from the fields of health and safety, human resources, psychology, and academia who are leading the way in their corner of the globe.
Hi, and welcome again to the UK Psych Health and Safety Podcast. My name is Sheila Lord, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Peter Kelly, and also our guest this week, who is Paul Cullen, who is a A320 captain and also an accident investigator in the aviation industry. So welcome, Paul, to the podcast. So introduce yourself. Tell us what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Sheila. Thanks, Peter. It's a real pleasure to be on the podcast. I love the work both of you are doing, so it's a real honour to be in your company. Yeah, for the last 22 years, I'm feeling old now. The last 22 years, I've been an airline pilot with a major European airline. I'm also an accident investigator, and I previously held the role of Director of Safety and Technical with the Irish Airline Pilots Association. In that role, I worked very closely with our peer support program, and I became quite acutely aware of the types of problems that pilots were struggling with. And that's where my interest in the whole area of mental health in pilots came from.
Okay. So talk to us about some of those problems that pilots are struggling with, because, you know, we know and we hear a lot that, you know, the traveling by air in the aviation industry is one of the safest industries in the world. So in the safest industry in the world, what are the problems that pilots and I guess other safety critical members of the industry struggle with?
I suppose the issues they struggle with are no different to the issues that everyone else struggles with. At the end of the day, it's still human beings working in aviation. Aviation is considered to be ultra safe. It's this one of the most heavily regulated industries in the world, parallel probably only by the nuclear industry. It's without a shadow of a doubt the safest form of transport in terms of fatalities and hull losses. However, when I was in my role working with the peer support program, I was quite surprised by the number of people who were coming with mental health problems. They were struggling with depression, anxiety, marital breakdown, stress, you name it. We were seeing it all. And that was a big surprise to me, because in my mind, I felt that, well, pilots shouldn't be having these problems, because we're cut from the same cloth as astronauts, as far as I... That was my view back then. I had been psychometrically screened from the thousands. I was one of the chosen few who got the job. And it didn't sit with me that pilots should be having these problems. Now, when I look back now, that was an extremely naive view. But unfortunately, a lot of people in aviation still hold that naive view that I held back then. Like, I was enlightened by the position that I was in. And also the research I've been involved in for the last 5-6 years has greatly changed my view. But a lot of people still hold that outdated view, including some of the pilots who suffer themselves. They see themselves as the outlier. They see themselves as the only one who's ever had an issue with maybe anxiety or depression. Because it's not spoken about. It's not something we speak openly about. When we go seek help, it's kind of in hushed tones. The peer support programs are confidential. Very often, even the employer doesn't find out many of the details because of the protections that the peer support program provides. So that whole setup, although it's great for the individual once they go into the system, it does very little to reassure people who are not in the system yet, who might have a problem, that they're not the only one to have experienced such a problem, mm-hmm. and that it's okay to be not okay. Despite all the messages that are sent out, they're not seeing physical evidence. They're not seeing examples of their peers who were not okay, who were handled well and are back in the system, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that within the aviation industry then, the stigma is much worse than other industries, and why would that be?
I do think the stigma is worse than most industries, I'd certainly say. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple of issues at stake. It's a male-dominated environment for pilots. Currently in the world, I think it's less than 10% of pilots are female. It's still quite a macho industry. There is the hangover from years ago when pilots came from the military. You know, men were real men. They didn't cry. We didn't break. I think there's a lot of that still hanging on. But even without that, there's an awful lot at stake. Pilots, we have a license. We're medically certified every year. And there's very stringent restrictions in place on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable for a pilot to be dealing with while still flying. And some airlines are probably better than others in terms of the supports they provide. But there's still an awful lot of airlines where if a pilot was to go sick with a mental health issue and they needed whatever period of time off, that would drastically impact on their ability to earn. And particularly younger pilots, like for a pilot now, someone who wants to become a pilot and they go to flight school, they could be looking at 120, 150,000 euro for their training. So there are an awful lot of pilots who are completely burdened with those debts for the first 10, 15 years of their career. It's like having a second mortgage. So they simply can't afford to have their salary cut. And then there's also the sense of judgment from their peers and whether this might affect their promotion and the people who are going to be deciding whether or not this individual is suitable to be promoted into the responsible position of being a captain. Now, regardless of whether that is in fact true, that perception is in a lot of the junior guys' heads that it will affect their ability to excel in their career and promotions.
I guess you're trying to deal with over safety incidents. So something comes up in the plane, you've got to deal with it, and it's dealing immediately. And that you're trained to within an inch of your consciousness of what to do in those situations. Would you agree or disagree then when it comes to health issues or the more unobvious health issues such as, let's say with the musculoskeletal disorders may be addressed because, you know, if there's some issues there. But in terms of the mental health, because it's not part of the formal structure, do you think that until mental health and mental health awareness becomes part of the process of getting registration again, do you think that would help or not?
I think it would, but it's just not on the radar at the moment. And I think because so many people hold the view that aviation is ultra safe, we're just not looking at that. And like the whole area of health and safety within aviation, I think is a bit of an elephant in the room. We seem to fall between two stools. I don't actually know who regulates health and safety in many airlines. The health and safety authorities will say, no, it's not us. It's the aviation authority, the national authority. And then when you ask the national authority, they're kind of saying, well, no, it's the health and safety authority. So I think we are falling between two stools. And a lot of airlines are not being audited in terms of health and safety. They're audited by the aviation authorities, but they're looking at other stuff. They're certainly not looking at psychosocial hazards, which I think they should be.
And how many, I mean, you've done a survey, I believe, how many pilots that you in your survey indicated that they do experience, you know, episodes of depression or anxiety or work-related stress. Do you have sort of a...
We do. I'll just go back to that survey. My interest in this area started about 2014, early 2015. I wasn't working formally in this area. I had recently left my job as head of safety with the Pilots Association. I still had the skill set that I developed as an accident investigator, but I had the curiosity. I wanted to understand deeper, why were these pilots who had come to us, why were they having problems when other people were not? So I conducted preliminary field research. I only subsequently found out afterwards that that's what it was called. I was really just trying to satisfy a curiosity that that's the way my mind works. I ask questions. And I spoke to 103 pilots and I started asking them about, like, this will display my ignorance. I called it pains in the asses because I didn't know the correct terminology of what I was trying to measure. I had a little notebook in my bag and I'd steer conversations when I talked to peers and colleagues. And I'd ask them about the pain in the ass of the job to them. What was it that was causing them problems? And over time, over the course of about a year, I started to see themes develop. Like, a lot of guys were complaining about the antisocial, the irregular hours, the disruptive nature of the job, the lack of control over the roster, the lack of control over getting annual leave, how it was impacting family life, how they were, you know, like, these were all things that we signed up for, but they just weren't being managed well. And I created this model of what I thought might be going on. It was a big, massive mind map. It was like a spaghetti junction type diagram. And at the time, I was working with an aviation psychologist on a completely different project, all about autopilots. And I brought it to her and I said, look, I think I have something interesting here. And she basically said, yeah, you do. But, like, you're a pilot, an accident investigator. I'm an aviation psychologist. What you're looking at there is in a completely different field. We know nothing about that. It's interesting, but we know nothing about it. It's not our expertise. And then Germanwings happened. And the whole world wanted to talk about pilot mental health. And I had been doing a bit of research. I'd been going into the university library looking for research papers. I could find loads on the military, but I could find nothing on civil aviation and about mental health in pilots. So we realized we needed help. We needed a bit of clinical guidance on this. So we approached a consultant psychologist, professor of clinical psychology in the university, and we showed him what I had. And he put meat onto it. He introduced me to the term work-related stress. So the pain in the ass became work-related stress. And he described the biopsychosocial model of health, where you have the three-legged stool. You have your physical health, your mental health, your social health, but that they're all interrelated and that one pillar can bring down the other. So like a three-legged stool in the bar, if you strengthen two of the legs and you have a weak leg, the stool is as weak as the weak leg. You have to reinforce all three legs. Otherwise, you fall flat on your back off the stool. So we put meat onto the diagram, onto my diagram. And we realized then that what was being done in the wake of the Germanwings accident was purely reactive. In the wake of the Germanwings accident, in which a pilot deliberately destroyed his aircraft and killed 150 people, after that, the authorities mandated peer support programs. They also mandated random intoxicant testing, and they mandated psychometric testing at the intake, at the recruitment stage. And the first day I looked at that, I thought, this is ridiculous. It's an absolute, it's a crock of shit. They're ticking boxes here. All they're gonna do is create a witch hunt. They won't prevent another accident because they're not doing anything to prevent pilots becoming unwell in the first place. There was no preventative element to it. And I compared it to what we do in aviation and what we do in healthcare. In healthcare, we have health promotion and then we have treatment of illness. So we have the preventative and the reactive element. In aviation, we have preventative and we have reactive risk management. I have presented our work probably to 50 different audiences around the world at this stage. And I start every presentation with a cartoon that I've used. It's Gary Larson, The Far Side. And it's two pilots looking out the window of his airplane. One says to the other, hey, what are those mountain goats doing up here in the clouds? Clearly, they have no idea where they are or what hazards they're about to face. And I think that's where pilots are right now in aviation. We don't know what the hazards are. to our mental health. I'm fortunate. I know many of them from the work we've done, but most of my colleagues know nothing about it. And we need to understand what the hazards are. And that's what I wanted to do. In 2016, after Germanwings, a team of researchers in Harvard conducted a survey of US pilots. And they caused consternation around the world when they reported that 4% of pilots were having suicidal thoughts and 12% were clinically depressed. When I saw that, I thought to myself, well, hold on, it's only 12%. How does that compare to the general population? And when I looked at the general population, I realized those pilots were actually doing marginally better than the general population. And when I looked at the levels of suicidal thoughts, at the time, in 2016, more than 4% of the general population in America were having suicidal thoughts. But how many were actually committing suicide? Far less. Mm-hmm. And how many of those were actually committing murder suicide? Even less, even more less. So I thought it was purely sensational what the US media did. And they caused a massive problem and further enhanced that stigma around mental health for pilots. So what I wanted to do, I wanted to recreate their study. And that's what I did. Myself and my colleagues, we put together a survey, but we dug much deeper. We didn't just look at the level of suffering. We wanted to look at resilience. We wanted to understand, well, if 12% are suffering, what about the other 88%? What are they doing differently? And is there anything that they're doing that the 12% could do to improve their resilience and improve their mental health? And we found out that there actually is. There's a huge amount that can be done. And we tried to turn what was a really negative story into a positive spin. We launched our survey in 2018. It was a massive survey, 185 questions. We not only measured levels of depression and burnout and exhaustion and disengagement, we also looked at lifestyle factors such as people's sleep, their exercise habits, their diet, their social network, the amount of time they went for pints with their friends or played five-a-side soccer. We also looked at workplace factors. And we discovered that we actually got slightly worse figures than they did. In our figures, we got 18% were suffering, or sorry, were meeting the threshold for clinical depression. About 7.5% were having suicidal thoughts. And 80% were meeting the threshold for moderate burnout. But we found that pilots who focused on getting good sleep, who focused on getting a reasonable amount of exercise each week, who had a reasonably good diet, but had a good support network around them, but most importantly, had a sense of purpose in their life, they scored much, much lower on the levels of depression being recorded. And then secondly, we looked at the workplace factors, and we saw that organizations where there was good organizational culture, where there was a sense of reward and recognition for good efforts, where there was influence and involvement, good work-life balance, those pilots had much, much lower levels of burnout, which demonstrated to us that, first of all, pilots were human, were just the same as everyone else, but that this is not something that's out of control. It can, with the right attitude, we can actually control this.
Yeah. And that was with, that was with the 110, was it? The 110 pilots, was that what?
No. No,
this was with a lot more, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, we had over 1,000. We got over 1,070 pilots. To date, it's still the largest and most detailed well-being study that's ever been done on a population of pilots.
So it shows a clear relationship by looking after you. People and protecting them, their physical and their mental health, then there was a positive correlation in reduced levels of depression and or amongst them. Yeah, so that's which is good evidence, isn't it, to take them to the employer to say, well, actually, you want efficient, healthy, safe pilots. Mm-hmm. Then a part of that is that we. Do you think that the health promotion angle, if we think of it, the PREVENT, which is the organisational changes, the tertiary, which is dealing with the incident, but that PROMOTE element, which sits sort of almost like an overarching, where do you see the industry going with that? Because you're effectively saying that if you, with these cohort of 1,000 pilots, if you put some time, effort and resources into promotion of mental health, the outcome will be this. Do you think they're going to be responsive, or what do you see?
I don't know how responsive they'll be, but I do know that some airlines are trying.
Mm-hmm.
But in my view, it's random acts of wellness. They're incoherent. There's just no joined up thinking. Yeah. I don't believe there's any real efforts to understand what the needs are of the employees. And it's, I think all groups are sort of in tired of the one feather. Different groups within aviation will have different needs. And I think that needs to be addressed, particularly now in COVID. In August of 2020, our research group was approached by the Flight Safety Foundation and the European Agency for Safety, or the European Aviation Safety Authority. And this is the EASA in the EU. It's in blah, 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 blah. And we were asked if we would help in doing another study. And we launched another survey last August, in which we measured levels of depression, anxiety. And we didn't just go after pilots this time. We went after all safety critical groups within aviation. We got over 2,000 respondents on this survey. And what we found was that in the COVID storm, we're not all in the same boat. We may be all weathering the same storm, but we absolutely are not all in the same boat. Of the 2,000 aviation workers that we looked at, we saw marked differences between different groups. This wasn't really any surprise. Around the same time, a study had been done on the populations of Ireland and the UK, and they found that there was certain socio-demographic risk factors that were going to influence whether someone was going to suffer with depression and anxiety during the pandemic. Three of the main factors were gender. Females were at a slightly higher risk. Next factor was age. People under the age of 35, but mostly people under the age of 25, were at a much, much higher risk of suffering with depression and anxiety during the pandemic. And lastly, those people that were financially impacted. Now, we looked at the different groups within aviation. I could have predicted which groups would have been worse. And
waves of
I reckoned, say again?
It's waves of the cabin crew that were in those categories, I guess.
Yes, that's correct. I'll give you an idea now of the figures that we saw. The general population in both the UK and the Irish study, 20% were meeting the threshold for moderate anxiety and 23% for moderate depression. When we looked at aviation, considering almost all aviation workers at the moment are financially impacted, 24% met the threshold for moderate anxiety and 30% for moderate depression. We then looked at the different groups. If you look at pilots are predominantly male, and most pilots in our group were over the age of 35. So we weren't in the two risk factors of being female or been under the age of 35. However, 21% met the threshold for anxiety and 25% for depression. So that's higher than the general population with pilots for both depression and anxiety. Air traffic controllers, mostly male. Most of them were over the age of 40, and very few air traffic controllers, because of the nature of the job, been state employees. Very few of them in our study were impacted financially. 10% met the threshold for anxiety, 17% for depression. We then looked at cabin crew, most of whom were female, most of whom were under the age of 35, and a large number were under the age of 25. 46% met the threshold for anxiety, 58% met the threshold for depression. That's over double than the general population.
Yeah, and that would have been, I guess, the furloughing scheme, amongst other things. I mean, it is probably worth saying that we have higher levels of reporting from females, which is sometimes why you get the more prepared, as we've already had the conversation, to to talk about depression and anxiety then.
Yeah.
Which is why we do so much work in promoting mental health amongst men, to say it's okay to talk, it's okay to talk about depression and anxiety. But yeah, those numbers are, you know, obviously, you know, interesting, aren't they? Because they clearly show the impact of this scheme. I mean, we talked about this before when you flew to Boston. Was it a couple of months back?
Yeah.
Your experience of flying there and then your experience of landing there was very different, wasn't it? And it's almost as though, and you've been doing this for 20 years, but it's a different, and I'm sure, I mean, might be wrong, but well, in this new world of work, this is going to come up in conversations in the cockpit, is it? Or on the flight deck, or if people are walking about the impact on their mental health, or do you think we'll go back to the status quo of not talking about it?
I hope we'll talk about it. I've certainly had conversations with colleagues in the last 12 months that I don't think they would have spoken to me the way they did 12 months ago. I think people are opening up more. It needs to happen. These conversations need to happen, particularly in aviation. In our 2018 study of over 1,000 pilots, we found that 33% believed that taking sick leave was acceptable at their airline. So one third of pilots believed to take sick leave was acceptable. 16% believed their employee cared about their well-being. 58% of pilots in that study said if they had a mental health problem, they would stand down. 75% of the pilots said if they had a mental health problem, they would seek help. However, 77% of the pilots said they would not disclose it to their employer.
Yeah. Which is part of the problem.
Yeah. And then when we looked at pilots who had spoken to someone about a mental health issue that they had, so 52% of the pilots surveyed said that they had spoken to someone about a mental health problem that they had encountered. 44% said they spoke to their spouse or a family member. 35% said they spoke to their GP. 13% said they spoke to a close friend. Now, this is where it gets really, really interesting. 4% said they spoke to their peer support program. And most shockingly of all, 2% said they spoke to a work colleague. So that completely, in my mind, backs up the hypothesis that there is a strong, strong stigma around mental health still in aviation in the workplace.
What would we do then? Or how do you go about tackling that stigma? I mean, we talk about stigma in mental health. How do you make it okay and acceptable to talk about depression and anxiety in this sector?
I think the culture needs to change. The whole culture around mental health and normalizing it needs to change. But we need to stop bringing in Bendy Brenda to do the yoga class at lunchtime, throw out the box of bananas into the canteen. We need meaningful support, but we need a massive cultural shift. And as we know, culture eats strategy for breakfast, but culture comes from the top. So the people at the very top of the organizations, they need to change. I was encouraged at the start of the year. Now, I haven't really heard any more to encourage me anymore, but early this year, the British Airways CEO, Mr. Sean Doyle, a fellow Irishman, he came out and he said, "Together we can end mental health discrimination. Today, British Airways is taking part in Time to Talk Day because we know that just one small conversation can make a big difference. With the strain of the global pandemic, opening up about mental health is more important than ever. And I'm proud to be part of this movement." That was the chief executive of British Airways, one of the largest airlines in the UK. Within hours of him making that statement, his director of flight operations, his chief pilot, Captain Al Bridger, came out and made a similar statement to his troops. Now, what I will say is, that was just a statement. I don't know exactly how much follow-up there was after that, or whether or not it resonated down through the organisations. But what I do know is that that's a first step. And without similar first steps like that, without courageous leadership in the place of cowardly management, without courageous leadership, these cultures will never change. And that's what's needed now.
Leadership and authenticity and compassion in leadership, a trait that I talk about regularly in my presentations and discussions, obviously, in LinkedIn. There is a very powerful narrative when a leader stands up and says, we're going to cover mental health, we're going to do something about it, or where they say, hey, you know, I've experienced depression, or I've experienced anxiety. And I think, but that coming from there is really important. It's what you do afterwards and what processes you put in place. We're going to go into a period, I think, and we are in a period of global decline. Yeah. There will be job losses across a whole range of different sectors, including your own. How do you think that will help or hinder the work you're going to try and do on mental health? Because it's a recognition that job losses come, you know, associated with that will be some level of depression around, you know, in people, or anxiety about their future. So what could the industry do if going forward that is the outcome? What would you be suggesting to them as somebody that works in the industry about protecting people's mental health?
I'll be very honest, Peter. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is in that case. We've never been here before.
Yeah. But I guess you've already got some practical stuff, but practical implications about supporting people and your peer support network and that. And
yeah.
The peer support network, just get a little going into that a bit. Are they trained in offering peer support, or is it just people that have volunteered themselves? Could you sort of explain to the listeners what does that look like?
It varies from organization to organization. I'm not going to say there's some good, there's some bad. What I would say is there's some good and there's some excellent. I would hope that they're all good, but there's different degrees of what good looks like. And some of the organizations, they are volunteers. They would have put themselves forward. Other ones would have been appointed. I suppose the one I can speak closest to is the one that exists in Ireland. And that's one of the oldest peer support programs in aviation that there is. It's gone over 30 years. It initially started for helping pilots handle substance abuse and alcoholism. However, it's now morphed into something much bigger and much more beneficial than that. And our peers are all trained in mental health first aid, but it's like triage. If you ring the peer support program, they're qualified and experienced enough to know what is it you need. They might not be able to give you what you need, but they can steer you in the right direction. Very often, I believe in most cases, it's enough for a conversation with them. That a lot of guys ringing are just looking for a shoulder to cry on, really. Even for someone to say, you know what, you're not the only one. A lot of your colleagues are dealing with this. Just to normalize the individual's experience. You will have other people, and people that I would have dealt with when I was involved. There were some people who really were hanging on by their fingernails, and they needed a direction to be sent in for professional help.
Okay. So would you say then there is a role for psych health and safety and well-being in your industry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that psychological health and safety is going to be the next jump in safety. If you were to look at the trends over the last 50 years and how safety has improved over the years with the introduction of various pieces of technology, mainly as like jet engines became more reliable than piston engines, there was far fewer crashes. As autopilots improved, far fewer crashes. Systems were put in place, terrain collision avoidance systems that would prevent pilots from flying into mountains, prevent airplanes from flying into each other. When they were introduced, the accident rate lowered. And I do think that the next massive jump that's going to be seen is going to be when psychological health and safety is introduced and we start looking after our people as individuals. We have a thing in aviation, crew resource management, CRM. It's all about how we work as teams. But I believe the weak link in that is that we don't look at how we work with ourselves. I'm trained to communicate with the other person in the cockpit, but I'm not really trained to communicate with the voices inside my own head. And I think that's what's needed now.
Yeah, it makes me think about the situation with Sally, wasn't it? You know, the pilot and everything else. I mean, yeah, you were trained to deal with that. But when you talked about it afterwards, there was a massive psychological component to it as well, which was actually, you know, we had a job to do, but then there was that impact afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, you don't see that coming out in any films or any documentaries, but actually there was that, you know, what's the personal impact on you know, in that situation. And but yeah, I would hope that 45,003, which is due out in June, you know, and you are very much steeped in the 45,001 standards on safety management, that actually that maybe that's an opportunity then for the aviation sector to put some bones around this area of health and safety, or psychological health and safety. So would you agree or disagree?
No, I do agree. I definitely think it's needed, not just for pilots, absolutely not for pilots, but for all workers in aviation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you're going to read it then, are you, Paul?
I have read it, Peter.
Sorry. Well, we're coming towards the end of our 40 minutes together, but if there's something you wanted to say as a take-home message on psychological health and safety in the aviation sector, if you had a platform, what would it be? What would be the message that you'd want to get out to your peers and people in your industry?
I think they should seriously take this, give this consideration. I think there's huge potential for the industry. A lot of the issues that the aviation industry are dealing with, I don't think they're even aware of. I think the levels of presenteeism, absenteeism, disengagement, there's a hugely vulnerable workforce that's about to come back after the pandemic. Our data from 2018 showed that there was workplace factors that were seriously detrimental to the mental health of pilots. We don't have data pre-COVID on other work groups within aviation, but I would suspect that those workers are facing similar hazards that are affecting them the same. We know from our data collected last August that the mental health of the aviation industry has been decimated. And those workers are now coming back in very vulnerable states into roles that they're probably suffering a little bit of rust out. They're not that familiar with what they're supposed to be doing. It's going to be a real challenge to turn aviation back on. And if our people are not firing on all cylinders, that challenge is only going to be worsened.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. And that was a nice tour around what is it, a large area and a very important area, and one that, Paul, you've really set a marker in the sand in terms of, you know, asking the questions about mental health and well-being. And obviously, when I have the opportunity to fly again, and maybe we'll meet somewhere in America, we can have a beer and share some stories. But thank you for taking the time today and coming on the Psych Health and Safety podcast.
Not at all, Peter. Sheila, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been listening to the UK Psych Health and Safety podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention and the new ISO 45003 standard, follow subscribe to the UK Psych Health and Safety podcast at www.ukpsychhealthandsafety.com.